Welcome, everyone, to Sunday Morning Live, Dharma. This is Reverend Koyo Kobose here, and it's the end of July. Time is going by in the middle of summer now already, and I know a lot of places it's pretty hot. And everybody has their own weather, climate situations. We have a hot, dry heat here in the valley. I read in the news that Midwest is under a lot of rain, and in the East Coast is having a scorcher. I read where today's paper, they were saying that, yeah, it's so hot that the farmers are feeding their chickens ice, so that they don't lay hard-boiled eggs, and all kind of jokes like this about the weather and how hot it is. But as Buddhists, we say, when it's hot, why you're hot. When it's cold, be cold. Well, today's guest is Doug Slatton. He lives in Camarillo, California, which is near Oxnard, which is near Los Angeles. I didn't realize that Camarillo's already maybe 100,000 population, he was saying. So it's a pretty big town. I had thought it was a smaller town. So it's everything's growing. And Doug's son is in our current lay ministry class. And we're going to hear from him for his Dharma Glimpse. Doug-san?
Thank you, Reverend Koyo. We're going to have to revise our estimate of the population of Camarillo. We Googled it and came up with the number 65K, but it probably seems like 100K to us, since every time we look, there's more development going on and sprawl, and it's a little bit disheartening, but I guess there's a lesson there, too. I'll now begin my Dharma glimpse. Coming up in our readings for the Bright Dawn Lay Ministry Group is a book by Eckhart Tolle called The Power of Now. Just by the title, it's clear that he's going to be talking about mindfulness and the importance of being in the moment, to use the popular phrase. But rather than talk about the power of now, I'd like to talk about the power of then. What or where is then? Then is anywhere but the here and now. It is the opposite of suchness and is the place where I spend most of my waking hours. It is a continuing dream that things were either better in the past or will be in the future. In fact, if I practice any kind of Buddhism, it would probably be called then Buddhism. What is the power of then? The power of then is its ability to make us spend our lives chasing an endlessly receding landscape, trying to get to a place where we eventually hope to rest. But in fact, we really don't want to get to that point, because being still means having to face the truth of impermanence, so we fill our minds with more distractions to put off that moment of truth indefinitely. Where does the power of then come from? Buddhism tells us that it comes from ourselves, from our ego-driven need to complicate the world and establish a place for ourselves in it. The power of then is manifested by our incessant need for variety and distraction in our lives, or what Nobuo Haneda calls augmenting and decorating our existence from outside. In the daily round of life, this generates the feeling that we're getting behind, so we try to accumulate extra time by working harder and multitasking. The Dutch author Jan Willem van de Wettering tells a story from the year he spent in a Zen monastery in Japan. On one occasion, he was scolded for his lack of concentration and mindfulness. The master, or head monk, who had seen him urinating and brushing his teeth at the same time, yelled, "You're making a mess of the toilet and your mouth." I think it's interesting that even here in an environment specially designed to be conducive to living in the now, it was necessary for him to distract himself with compulsive behavior. Computers, cell phones, and other technological marvels actually make work and keep us busier, which is the point. Their real function is as distractions from the familiar, the ordinary, the real. To paraphrase Tom Cruise, we can't handle the truth. So the trend in the world is to view reality through any number of electronic enhancements. Nature is more vivid when seen on a big screen plasma TV. People are more interesting when called on a cell phone, texted, or visited on Facebook rather than met in person. To sum it up, virtual reality is becoming preferable to real reality. At this point in my rant, I find myself thinking that this isn't really much of an insight. It's really just another observation on our gloomy conditional existence, more of a Dharma glimpse than glimpse. But this is my path. I've come to terms with the fact that I am unlikely to have the burning bush type of spiritual awakening, but will make whatever progress I can through hard work and introspection. But from what I've heard, the gate is wide, and this is the way others have taken. So how can I get from then to now? In his 8-point program for spiritual living, Eknath Estrawan offers this deceptively simple advice: slow down. More specifically, this includes: 1, give yourself more time. 2, don't crowd your day. 3, ask what's important. 4, take time for relationships. 5, take time for reflection. 6, don't let yourself get hurried. 7, cultivate patience. And 8, slow down your mind. Some of these I've been practicing for some time. Some need more work. The last, slow down your mind, is almost impossible for me to do. And when I start the day with a morning meditation, I must first ignore my mind, which is screaming at me to turn on the computer and get busy before I get further behind. But I know this is an illusion, and that if I am still, the demands of the then will eventually become quieter. I think this is as good a place as any to stop. Thank you for letting me speak today.
Thank you very much. I always find it interesting that, you know, this morning when I was lying in bed thinking about this morning's broadcast, I was thinking, as usual, I said, well, gee, what am I going to talk about today? I appreciate the relaxed format of our weekly talks. It's not like I'm a big guest type of a thing for me, and I'm at home, and so I don't get too stressed out about having to plan way ahead of time what I'm going to talk about. But a few hours before the broadcast, that's about the latest I can have to start thinking about at least some kind of subject matter. And I was thinking about slowing down today. And then after I got up and came to the computer room and I looked up Doug San's Dharma Glimpse, which he provided, and I printed it out, I said, wow, it's the same topic. And it's kind of like a Twilight Zone thing, but it's a very important, it's an important topic. Before going into it, I'll just share it, sort of a joke, I guess, is when he was talking about, you know, there's a common phrase, now and then. Now and then, you know, it has to do with time. It's a phrase that comes off our tongues, now and then. And somebody made a little play on those words with Eastern spirituality and said, Dao and Zen, you know, Taoism. And so Dao and Zen. So the subject matter of now and then is important subject matter concerning the Eastern philosophy and so forth, values. But as I was thinking about what to talk about, I organized it. It could be summarized in 3 aspects and 3 phrases. The first is slow down. And the second take is how, not what. And then the third sort of code phrase is self-sufficiency, not efficiency. I think these 3 themes or categories of topics incorporates a lot of what Doug San covered too. So slow down, how, not what, sufficiency, not efficiency. And the reason I was thinking about slow down theme, starting with that one, is that the last Sunday in July, our temple in Chicago always has its annual temple picnic. And I remember, you know, growing up as a child, and in those days, they had certain kind of games that they always had games for the kids and prizes. And kids especially like games. I was going to say kids are very competitive, but adults are too, different kind of ways perhaps. But we like to win prizes and so forth. Well, there's a memory I have of a temple picnic. I must have been about 9 or 10 years old. And this game that they had, one of the games was they gave you a rolled up newspaper, which you used as like a weapon, a stick. And they blew up a balloon and tied it to your waistband in your back waist. And then the object of the game was to swat and break everybody else's balloon while avoiding anyone popping your balloon, swatting it with these paper roll up newspaper bats. It's not a very PC game. It kind of, you know, encourages violence perhaps, and I don't think they would do such the awareness is they won't have such games nowadays to teach their children those kind of values, but of aggression. But in those innocent days of the 50s, well, I was, of course, I was very good at this. I was fast, I was quick, you know, and jumping around. And then I saw a balloon that had gotten loose from and was bouncing along the ground. Man, as fast as a cat, I jumped on it and swatted it and smashed it to smithereens, and then jumped around, looked around. Somebody was laughing, smiling, and then I realized that it was my balloon. I had been jumping around so much it came loose, and I had busted my own balloon. I was too fast and efficient for my own good. And then this story always reminds me of one that I read about a small article, and I suppose it's a true story. It's about an experimental jet plane that flew so fast it shot itself down. Now you might ask, hey, how can a plane shoot itself down? Well, as I understand it, it's an experimental Navy jet plane, and it was cruising over the ocean, and it was going at, it started out real high, and was way up there, and its trajectory was a little bit going down, and part of the training phase was it shot off its cannon. Okay, that was the next in the sequence of things to do. Shot off its cannons. And then the next sequence was to go into a power dive. Test your power dive. So, okay, he shoots his cannon, and then he increases his trajectory and goes into a power dive and kicks on his burners, and then he levels off. But his power jets were so fast that he overtook the cannon shots that he had just previously fired, and they hit him, because as he leveled out, he came right in line of the line of fire of where he had shot, and it shot himself down. He went too fast for his own good. And that sort of summarizes our own individual lives, and it sort of summarizes society and our civilization in general. That we're shooting ourselves down. We have to take a look at our own values, our own relationship with time, and examine things. You know, in our life, individual life, we always think that we're supposed to be pursuing happiness, the happiness of pursuit, guaranteed by the Constitution. So we got all kind of goals, you know, for success and happiness. But, boy, we're setting ourselves up for a fall there. Because as soon as you achieve one, well, you gotta put up another goal, another goal, another goal. That's the definition of what in Pali, the Buddhist language, is called dukkha, unquenchable thirst. You think that, oh, after I get this, I'll be happy. Oh, after I get this, achieve this, then it's going to be good. It's never ending. So we shouldn't concentrate on the happiness of pursuit. Instead, concentrate on the pursuit of, I messed it up, don't concentrate on the pursuit of happiness. Concentrate on the happiness of pursuit. Kind of like, that's kind of like a glib psychobabble, but there's a truth in there. It's the means is the end. That's a favorite quote of my father's. He always was saying, yeah, means equals end. It's not that the end justifies the mean, which is another popular saying. And in the same vein, when you look at an individual's life, we often think, hey, right around the corner, something, you know, that's when I'm going to really start to live. When we're real young, we say, oh, I can't wait to start school. You know, my older brother is in school, and I just have nothing to do at home. Hey, we're looking for school. But once you're in school, and you say, hey, I got to do this rinky-dink stuff. Wait till I go to high school. Then, man, yeah, I'm going to be more independent. Then, you say, well, it's when I go to college, and I go away, and then I get to choose my own courses. That's, hey, that's that. And then you're in college, and then you're saying, hey, forget this stuff, man. I want to get a job. I'm going to make some money. That's when I'm going to really, you know. Then you're in your job, and you're looking forward to weekends and vacations. And then pretty soon you're looking forward to retirement. So that's when I'm really going to do what I want and really live, you know. It's sort of like you're going to, you're always on a vacation, and you never unpack your bags, you know. You're never at home. You never get that settled feeling into the now. No, we don't have to turn into the sort of second theme, how, not what. We don't have to change what we do. We have to change how we do it. Turn on your computer. Turn on the computer slowly. Get busy. Yeah, but make haste slowly. It's another saying. So it's related to slow down too. All of these things are interrelated, these different themes. But how the Buddha taught. That's another title of an article in one of the essays in Everyday Suchness of my father's book. You know? And I think we forget this, especially as students of the Dharma. And there's a book called What the Buddha Taught. There should be a book on how, not what the Buddha taught. How he related to people. So it's not what we do, but how we do it. You don't have to change what we're doing. You know? It's a how, not what. You know, when you make haste slowly, I was thinking of sports example too, where, you know, the veteran players, they always say about the rookies who has a lot of potential, hey, has the game slowing down for them? That's when you know that they're really getting good. The game slows down. You can see the seams on the ball when it's zooming towards you at 100 miles an hour in baseball. But you're going up for the rebound, and you could see the writing on that ball as you bring it into your hands. The game slows down. The what is the same. But how you're doing things, you're relaxed. You know? They make it, the good players, the great players, they make it look easy. They are relaxed. You know? They know how to make hay slowly. The sufficiency, not efficiency, is another teaching that my father often talked about. What this means is, you know, it's not the speed or the... One way to talk, say that this has to do with values. It has to do with warm humanity and not cold efficiency, is what it is. Not just time, you know, or, you know, efficiency, the part of efficiency that sacrifices warm humanity and kindness to others. This is where you get impatient, you lash out, you complain, you blame. Others are too slow, others are too stupid, others are, you know, getting in the way. And sufficiency means, well, see, you can get the job done, but you don't forget what's really important in the stuff of living in life. That's what's implied in that term, sufficient. Means you can, you know, it means that you don't forget what's truly important just because you have to deal with the merely urgent. It's just kind of a neat phrase that a busy executive once kept as his personal mantra. Don't forget what's truly important just because you have to deal with the merely urgent. You know, fires. You got to put this fire out. Put this little fire out. Okay. That's the bane of busy, important people, and very efficient people too, because everybody calls on them because they know that they're good at what they do. This has to do with sort of with values clarification, I guess, and how we category things as important, unimportant, or as big or as small. You know, you say, "Oh, I don't have time for that." You know, all this little stuff. Hey, man, I got some important things I got to take care of. I got responsibilities. I got a lot of pressure on me. And we get impatient. We don't take time for relationships. We don't take time for reflection. Okay. We lash out at others. So this has to do with kindness, really. And be kind to others. Not in the name of efficiency, saying, you know, everything is best. You know, that's one of, I really like that phrase and that story behind it. You see, it's where, the original story was where Banzan went into, I think it was a meat market. Maybe if it's Buddhist, it should be a vegetable place, but we went to a butcher shop and said, "Hey, give me your best piece of meat." The butcher said, "Hey, every piece in my store is the best." And Banzan was enlightened. There's a lot to unpack in this small story, but everything is best. You know, this relates to sufficiency, not efficiency. Okay. Most efficient way, what we think is important, the big things. No, everything's the best. Everyone, every situation is important. How we do things, not what. You know? It's important how we do everything. Okay? Not just what we think is the important things. So everything is best. The non-judgmental way. I read where in a recent paper someplace, I think they were interviewing some actress that was doing a certain role, in which the role had to deal with, I think, picking up dead people to take to the morgue or something like this. And an actor said something like, yeah, I like this role because this character really likes dead people, talks to the dead people that she picks up. She says, they don't talk back to me. I'm not going to be judged. And when you think about it, that drives us a lot of us. Role is so, you know, playing a superiority, inferiority thing, and defensiveness, and attack before we are attacked verbally. You know, so that all that judgmentalness comes into these themes here too. But we can't escape by not dealing with people, you know, as that example sort of suggests. Okay, the dead don't talk back and don't judge us. We can go there, live there. We have to deal with people. So in other words, we can't escape or avoid. What we got to do is change ourselves so that no matter what kind of situation is, no matter what we're doing, we don't get victimized. We don't self-victimize ourselves and go into the blaming game and protection game and so forth. Huh. Well, I'm carrying on, but yeah, very good topic. Very good topic. That's all for today's broadcast. I put my hands together in oneness and gratitude. Thank our guest, Doug-san, and I thank all of you for joining us today. And as always, have a beautiful day.